From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, will artificial intelligence destroy us? Oh, let's hope not, but a lot of people are saying could be. And what could destroy us one day is an X flare from the sun. Sunspot AR2181, growing and beginning to crackle with impulse. M-class solar flares. This development could break several days of quiet on the sun and lead to more active things this weekend. This year's Atlantic hurricane season is shaping up to be one of the weakest in decades, with only five named storms in the region so far this year. This is the fewest named storms since the full Atlantic season of 1983, when there were four. The 1994 season also had only five named storms in October, then two hurricanes formed in early November of that year, so we've been lucky. As we reported yesterday, the first person diagnosed with Ebola in the United States has died, and in Spain, authorities euthanized an Ebola patient's dog because of the slim chance that it could spread this disease. And now some U.S. airports will start taking temperatures of passengers arriving from countries where Ebola is concentrated. The new screenings will begin Saturday at New York's JFK International Airport and then expand to Washington's Dulles and the international airports in Atlanta, Chicago, and Newark. An estimated 150 people per day will be checked using high-tech thermometers that simply do not touch the skin. Now, you've heard a lot about Ebola over the past several weeks. Maybe too much. But how bad is it? How deadly is it? Let's check in with Howard Bloom, whom I refer to as the human computer. Howard, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Peter Breggin in a moment about the panic behind this. But in terms of the seriousness of this, it's slowly starting to grow. And I think people are concerned about it because the fatality rate is so high.
The fatality rate is roughly 40%. As of yesterday, 3,879 people had died out of 8,033 confirmed cases. This is deadly. It is time to be fearful. But one thing to know about fear, this is very important, George. You have to use your emotions as tools. And sometimes the time comes when you use your fear as a motivator, but stay calm and analytical. So we've had some big successes with Ebola. There is the Nebraska Biocontainment Patient Care Unit. It's treated two missionaries, American missionaries, with Ebola. Both of them have lived. Both of them have walked out of the containment unit healthy people. It's got a third person right now. He's a missionary, and let's hope he does as well. There are suspected cases that are turning out to be not Ebola. A sheriff's deputy in Texas. We thought he had Ebola. He does not.
He tested negative.
A Red Cross nurse in Australia, we thought she had Ebola. She has tested negative. There have been slip-ups, especially in Texas. In Texas, the doctors failed to get the information. They failed to get the memo that this person had been, a Liberian, had been in the hot zone, had been in West Africa, where Ebola is rampant right now. And because of that lack of communication, that patient could, his case could have been caught much earlier. He could have been caught when he went to the emergency room, and it could have been caught when it was time, when there was time to isolate him and protect other people from getting Ebola. In Spain, the training has been poor. The fit of the hazmat suits has been poor. One doctor mentioned that the hazmat suit sleeves were too short, and so his skin was exposed between his gloves and his sleeve. And the training was only a half an hour in which people didn't do live hands-on use of the hazmat suits. Well, because we're scared to death right now, we are looking at all of these negatives and figuring out almost instantly how to make sure they never happen again. And that is the key. There's a lesson here from, of all people, Elon Musk, the head of SpaceX. Elon Musk looks at every disaster, every rocket that blows up, as a learning opportunity. And he feels he's got to analyze it like crazy. He's got to invent his way beyond it. And then he has to make sure that mistake never happens again. And with the help of the press, which has been very vigilant on this, that is exactly what we can and should be doing.
Howard, and put this in perspective, the so-called normal flu kills 36,000 Americans every year. 36,000. If we had 36,000 people die from Ebola, people would be hiding in their homes for the rest of their lives.
Right. And so this is really minor by comparison with the flu. But there are some things that we're used to, and we have rituals and systems for handling. The flu is one of them. Things that are unusual, things we don't have systems for handling, scare the death out of us. They become the subject of books like The Hot Zone, panic books, suspense books, books that loom with danger and threat. And it is important to zero in on those things that are unusual, that don't fit the normal patterns, because they could become, in the way this has become a danger, it seems like only a few days ago when there were a few hundred deaths. Now there are close to 4,000. So this is rapidly expanding, but judging from the experience of the people at the Nebraska Biocontainment Patient Care Unit, who stress being meticulous and calm, this thing can be handled. And you're absolutely right. One of the biggest epidemics that we face year after year after year is the flu, and we never realize that and automobile accidents.
That's right.
We never realize how many people those two things kill.
Howard Bloom, thank you so much. Always right on. Dr. Peter Breggin, of course, is on our program quite a bit, author of Medication Madness, Taking Back to Prozac and Talking Back to Prozac and Brain Disabling Treatments and Psychiatry. I wanted him on for a few moments tonight to talk about this psychology of panic, because there is panic out there. You can't seem to go anywhere without people bringing up Ebola. And Peter, just how bad is it? How this panic, can it grow? Can it fester?
And I really think that your guest hit the nail on the head. We should be concerned about Ebola. And I think the people who are telling us not to panic are the politicians who are panicking about what we're learning about America. Our health system isn't set up to handle Ebola. It's so clear that hospitals are going to be overrun by a few patients. And it's also clear that if the southern border remains uncontrolled, as soon as we have a panic down in Central America, some cases of Ebola or a panic about Ebola, that we're going to be inundated in this country because we haven't taken charge of controlling the border and protecting the country. So I think a lot of this talk about don't panic, and I've been looking at who's saying it, really studying this, George, it's coming from people who don't want us to think hard about things, like your first guest was saying. And I think we need to think hard about two things that some of our politicians don't want us to think about. One, how do we take care of America so America can be a beacon to the world and be able to help out and save the world? And the second thing is they don't want us to look at self-reliance, because the one thing that continues to be clear is government bungling, and folks really do need to be self-reliant. We need to have our own family plans. We do need to have stored food. We do need to stay up on what's happening politically. So I don't think this is so much a psychological issue of panic right now, but a political issue.
All right, we'll watch it, Peter. But if more cases pop up, people are really going to get very, very strange these days. Islamic State fighters seized more than a third of the Syrian border town of Kobani. A U.S.-led airstrike failed to halt their advance, and Turkish fighters looked on without intervening. Now, with Washington ruling out ground operations in Syria, Turkey said it was unrealistic to expect that it'd mount a cross-border operation alone to relieve the mainly Kurdish town. Tense situation going on right now as I speak in St. Louis and Ferguson. Police and protesters there, they're still protesting, of course, the police shooting of an unarmed man. That entire case has gone to a grand jury. Nobody knows what's going to happen there, but tension there is still very, very bad. The Dutch foreign minister said that one of the 298 people killed in the downing of a Malaysia Airlines plane over eastern Ukraine was found wearing an oxygen mask. He indicated that then not everybody on board that plane died instantly when the plane was hit by a missile. U.S. stocks sinking, erasing all of the previous day's rally. They're concerned about Europe's softening economy and global concerns. Up next, Sterling Allen joins us. We're going to talk about his work in the free energy arena, some fascinating things, and Sterling has a major announcement for us. So stick around on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Sterling Allen, founder and CEO of the PES Network, PES Network, and the New Energy Congress. Now, that's comprised of energy professionals from all over the world who review the most promising new and emergency energy technologies. Sterling was with me several months ago, and he's back on Coast to Coast. And I understand, Mr. Allen, that you've got a major announcement about cold fusion. Tell me about it.
5 years ago, Hans and Fleischmann came on the scene and made a big splash. Media got all excited about it. And then, these were well-experienced electrochemists, and the effect that they came up with was very difficult to replicate. And the scientific community, I think, jumped the gun, said thumbs down, junk science, and the media felt embarrassed. And so cold fusion kind of went underground. Meanwhile, there's been a lot of people who've been chasing it. One of the leaders in the cold fusion industry who came on the scene with an announcement in 2011 was Andrea Rossi, who we had on your show.
That's right.
Yeah. And he just barely, after it was an excruciating 9 months of anticipating this third-party test results from an academic group, six people signed on this review, just announced or actually published their results 2 days ago. And what they found, what they said was that this device, they call it the hot cat, it ran it over 1,000 degrees Celsius, which is plenty hot to run a turbine, a steam turbine, for example. It ran for 32 days continuous, and then they shut it off. They were totally satisfied that it would keep on running on just a gram of fuel. Nickel went into it, and it produced 3.5 times more energy out on average than what it took to keep it running. And this was running it very conservative, just to basically make the point, not to try and push it to its limit, because on the low end, typically they're shooting for 6 times over unity. And so this is a major development, because this is these are professors, PhDs from a number of different institutions in Europe who are putting their reputations on the line because of the bad rap that cold fusion has gotten over all these years. And they're also noting that the species of elements going into it were changed. So the ratio of isotopes starting were different than at the end.
So there is no radiation with cold fusion, is there?
No radiation whatsoever in this process, either before, during, or after. And so it's a very clean, safe technology.
Why has it been so controversial, Sterling?
Well, I actually go to the Men in Black theory on that, I believe. You know, the people who basically gave it a bad rap were from MIT, and they had a vested interest. They should have recused themselves because they were involved in this billion-dollar tokamak project and had a lot of money coming to their school, which would have dried up had cold fusion taken off.
So I saw a movie several years ago. Morgan Freeman was involved in it, and it was a movie about cold fusion. I remember that. And they had it in some building, and they were experimenting and playing with it and everything else. Why has it taken so long, Sterling, for us to even get this out and available in the marketplace?
Well, it's largely because there's a number of factors, one of them being that the powers that be like being the powers that be, and they don't want something that's going to make themselves obsolete. And when you have a clean, affordable energy source, people are no longer dependent on the power companies and the grid and the government and whatnot. They can kind of stick it to the man, so to speak. And so by having people dependent on the grid and not independent,
So you have to stop at the gas station, put your credit card in. If you've got something in the back of your car that keeps the thing running, you don't have to stop for fuel. Or in your plane, you don't have to stop for fuel. Fly as far as you want without, you know, pulling over, or maybe take a rest stop, go to the bathroom, pick up a snack, but that's about all. You know, that's power to the people, and the people who are controlling the planet right now are not about freedom, they're about tyranny.
Oh, that's right. Now, how would you envision, assuming you can do whatever you want to do, how would you envision cold fusion and its use?
Well, there are basically everything that requires power eventually could be scaled to use cold fusion. Everything from your iPad recharger to a utility system running, you know, the grid in your local town. Everything in between, something that runs your car, runs your spaceship to go to the moon and back. Any application that you can think of could be scaled. The first one that's probably going to come on the scene will be industrial heat and then industrial power. And these are actually already, you can plunk down money and get one of these 1 megawatt systems.
So not a little system, a little cold fusion system for your house?
That's probably 5 to 10 years away with all the regulations.
Yeah, that's not bad. It would gets us off the grid. And, you know, I've got a campaign to get this grid insulated against an EMP attack or an X flare from the sun. I'd love it if every little home had its own little cold fusion system.
Exactly. That makes us impervious to those kinds of disruptions, because now it's distributed energy and you don't have this entire grid that can go down and make everyone without power. Now everyone is independent. And if you have a solar flare or an EMP from a weapon, now, you know, basically it's easier to first of all, insulate them. You can get EMP chambers and have a backup system in a neighborhood, for example, so that every neighborhood would have one place that has an EMP chamber that would be protected. So if you had an EMP, either from solar or weapon, you could pull that thing back out and you've got a backup. And that way you're not completely wiped out.
How did you get interested in this, Sterling? What was it that sparked your interest?
Well, I'm not only interested, I'm totally consumed in this and for about 12 years. You know, I was running a website, greaterthings.com. Somebody sent me a link and started talking about this free energy stuff and got really excited, and I started a page on that website about free energy, and that basically started this whole quest that has been, you know, every waking hour since then, basically trying to help bring these solutions to the planet. And that's one thing I really liked about this, is it's solution-oriented. You know, these things are real, and when we finally stop deserving tyranny and start deserving freedom, I think floodgates are going to open, and these myriad of technologies are going to come flooding out.
I think so, too. Sterling, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment to continue chatting with you about free energy and about cold fusion. Later on, we'll take some phone calls with you as well. I want to talk with you about some XPRIZE launching of a $20 million forbidden energy prize. Tell me what that might be all about. And are there any companies popping up out there that are trying to build small cold fusion plants? And are they meeting any resistance? I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Sterling Allen. Later on tonight, we'll be talking about Virtually Human, the promise and the peril of digital immortality. Elon Musk said, look out for artificial intelligence could destroy us. We'll be back in a moment with Sterling Allen on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sterling Allen with us. Sterling, the XPRIZE, of course, well known for getting privatization into space. What's this $20 million forbidden energy prize? What's going on there?
Yeah, what happened is they recently had a little convention, and they had 6 different options that different members of their group presented for their next prize, their next big thing. And Barry Thompson, who is a board member of the XPRIZE, you know, started by Berber Chan, said that
there is, quote, an inquisition of scientific mindsets that is holding back breakthroughs in science. Scientists consider that energy sources like cold fusion, zero-point energy, are possible, but in reality, no one can investigate it in academia because of blacklisting and a code of silence surrounding these unpopular topics. That was verbatim from their statement, and he won. So forbidden energy is now the next big thing that they're doing. I'm going to be having a conference call, our New Energy Systems Trust, in a couple of weeks to talk about deadlines and how we can work with them and, you know, bird-dogging some good stuff to send their way, where do people go to sign up, what are the terms, et cetera. So it's pretty exciting.
Are there any companies out there that are on the cusp of producing cold fusion on a regular basis for income?
Well, Andrea Rossi is doing it routinely. Brillouin's doing it in California. Defcalion, I'm not sure where they're at. It's been a while since we've gotten an update on them. There's actually, you know, a good dozen that are making waves that we hear about from time to time. There's an open source project, the Martin Fleischmann Memorial Project is open sourcing different designs. There's a really cool design that we heard about this morning in our conference call, the New Energy Systems Trust, talking about using what's called the jitterbug effect, and really exciting stuff. So it's a very active field, and there are companies with employees and investors, and, you know, this is not junk science. This is for real, and these people are taking it very seriously, and it's a race to see who's going to get to the market first.
How would you make money producing cold fusion, Sterling?
Well, different than the grid, rather than, you know, having a plug that you plug into and then pay some company for, this would be a device that you would buy, whether for your home, for example. So it'd be like a solar system where you install a system on your home that powers your home, except you don't have to have the sun overhead. You don't have to worry about the wind blowing. It's 24/7 continuous power. So you basically pay for the device. And that could be financed through a company that would basically bankroll the things so that rather than paying the grid, you pay them maybe 10% or 20% less than what you're paying the grid. You've got clean energy, and then when you're done paying it off, it's yours.
It's yours. And so it's free, or do you replace it? What happens?
Well, at that point, everything is free. You've paid for the thing. Let's say, for example, cold fusion has maybe a 3-year return on investment compared
wow.
to solar, it's like 30-year return
amazing.
On investment. And so after 3 years, that's yours, and that's free energy from then on. You're not paying for your electricity.
Could cold fusion be put in a small device to move a car?
Yes.
Tell me more than yes.
Well, you know, it would be, for example, something that would power your house could be the size of a half a refrigerator, for example. And if you then integrate that into an Elon Musk type of Tesla Roadster, for example, and you package that in the trunk of the car, you've got some batteries back up so you can handle your acceleration power that you need. And you do regenerative braking, and you harness that power into the battery system so that you're dealing with an average, not the need for acceleration. That amount of power could power your car.
That would be amazing.
It would, and that's coming. And not only that, but we're talking about jetpacks. So now rather than gridlock, worrying about getting to work and am I going to be 4 hours in traffic on what normally takes 20 hours on no traffic day, now you can just put your little jetpack on and fly wherever you want to go.
You think that's realistic?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know people are working on that. It's Rafael Morgado, aviation2.0.com. He's got some amazing technologies. We've talked about him on your show quite a few times.
Yeah.
And he's got a prototype worked up on that and working on getting funding to get that thing all worked up. That would be a fuel system. So you'd have maybe a 100-mile range on a tank of gas, a couple, gallon and a half of fuel. So at the 100-mile range is pretty good. You're probably going to get tired of flying after 100 miles.
Well, yeah, 100 miles straight line back and forth, that's a long distance.
Yeah. But if you're touring the Grand Canyon or doing some fun sports or whatever, you could do the cribbage kind of thing. All kinds of new endeavors that we could launch with these kinds of techniques.
Oh, boy, you better work if you're going to take a dive over the Grand Canyon, huh?
Yep.
So, with all these possibilities, realistically, I know you threw out 5 years, but I mean, realistically, when could we see this? I'll throw out some potential, some possibilities. See this used in the house. 5 years, you said?
Yeah, I would say if the human population woke up and galvanized and got excited about this, we could see it in a year and a half. But that's not going to happen. That's not reality speaking. We've got a lot of pushback from academia, from mainstream media. They're totally ignoring this. I live in Utah, and they haven't touched this story. Not a whisper. The only thing coverage they gave of cold fusion was when Martin Fleischman died. They had a little memorial on him. They haven't talked about Andrew Rossi, haven't breathed a word about him, or any of these other companies that we keep bringing in front of them. They just ignore it.
What are the possibilities that this will never happen?
That's up to us. That is a possibility. I mean, if we as a human species just say, I don't want it, I like tyranny, we won't get it.
At all?
At all. If we enjoy tyranny that much, we'll stay glued to our petrofuels and the petrodollar and the oil and these guys that like raping the planet so they can give us energy rather than these free these energies that harness the will work of nature, which is clean, inexhaustible, ubiquitous, everywhere present, doesn't run out. I mean, that's what we want. And cold fusion is just one of 25 unconventional genres that are there, percolating, getting ready in the wings, waiting for us as a civilization to be ready.
What do you find to be the most exciting aspect of this?
Well, I enjoy the hunt. I enjoy being on the cutting edge. I can't say I enjoy being made fun of. Nobody does. But I like, being a maverick. And standing up for the little guy that's got something wonderful, bringing attention to it, helping bring resources and inventors and engineers to help work it out. And I have a keen satisfaction that this is going to be the next revolution. It's huge. This is going to be bigger than the internet. This is going to be bigger than iPhones, much bigger, because iPhones are, a subset of the technology. This energy is everything nowadays. Everywhere we go, energy is powering our stuff, whether it's our lights or our car or our devices, our computers, everything, our entire infrastructure is energy-based. And what if we don't have to plug stuff in anymore? We don't have to worry about paying an electrical bill. That's where we're headed. And it's going to not only be clean, but it's going to be affordable. So now you can do things that you could never imagine before. You've seen those little... I fly things where people go in a wind tunnel basically for humans, and they get to do flips and stuff like that in this little chamber. That would be so much more cheap and affordable if you had a free energy device blowing that, 20 kilowatt fan or whatever it is. Maybe it's a 1 megawatt fan. It's a lot of power that makes that thing go, so you can pretend like you're flying through the sky.
Sterling, for the home, roughly how much would a unit cost?
I'm thinking that the early adopter technologies are going to be more expensive.
Sure. They always are.
But once, 2 years down the road, once these things start getting introduced and you have mass production, you get economies of scale going on, like the computer revolution. At first, they were very expensive. Then they got cheaper and smaller, et cetera. Same thing will happen with energy. And 5 years out after the initial rollout of the first, breakthrough that finally wakes people up that there are other solutions that in science said was impossible, and yet here they are, they're in the marketplace. 5 years after that, we'll be talking like, you know, $3,000 to buy something that will power your house.
All right, so would there be any obsolescence to it? Would it break down after a while? How long would it last?
With the moving parts, they would wear out faster, but we had really good gears. We had good lubrication. So, you know, the typical life on something like that, you do maintenance on it, and it might have a lifetime of 10 years before you have to replace it. But if it has a three-year return on investment, you've got 7 years of free power. You're not having to pay anyone anything except maybe an occasional service visit.
Okay, but look at what you face, though. You pay for it for 3 years. It's amortized. It's done. You have no payments thereafter. You save a fortune in utility bills. What's going to happen to all these utility companies that are out there now pushing nuclear power?
They're all obsolete, including solar and wind will be made obsolete. But just like the computer revolution, when they came along, people said, oh, no, we're going to lose all these jobs. But it created more jobs than it took away. And so, you know, people who are presently working at a power company might change jobs to be installing free energy systems in a home, for example. So it just shifts people from one job to another.
Will anybody be able to stop it once it starts rolling here?
Well, again, I think that comes back to us as a civilization and choices we make. We make a decision collectively, do we deserve this? And individually, we can answer that question. You know, there's early adopters, and that's actually, I wrote an article last week suggesting that that's where the first technology rollout should be targeted, is preparedness people who are awake, people who are, you know, Mother Earth News and InfoWars Magazine and Coast subscribers. Those are the kind of people you want to target at first. They're because there's not the pushback from, hey, these guys don't deserve it. And the angels can say, yeah, fine, we'll let it go out to those guys. And when I say angels, I'm talking, you know, the angelic hosts of God, whatever you want to call them, that are kind of calling the shots from the other side of the veil. And it's like a mother who says, you know, until you finish your chores, you don't get this treat. And free energy is the treat, and we have to finish our chores, so to speak. We have to change our hearts and start, you know, get back to God, get back to goodness, and stop doing the things that breed tyranny. And when we do that, then the angels will say, green light, give it to them. They're ready for it.
Exciting times ahead, Sterling.
Indeed. I mean, it's very exciting. And there's a lot of hope in free energy, because this says that, you know, we don't have to go into economic meltdown. We don't have to, when everything falls apart, be scraping and like the cavemen. You know, we live in relative comfort.
What about the evil empire that steps in and says, we don't want this. We still want gasoline. We still want a power grid. We want to charge people hundreds of dollars a month. We don't want this.
Yeah, you've seen the cartoon with the guy hanging off the cliff on a platform, on a podium, and the audience is on the other side of the cliff holding him up, and all they needed to do is just step off the platform, and he's out of there. And, you know, we basically empower whoever it is that's leading us, and if we don't want that message anymore, if we step into abundance and goodness, then tyranny will be obsolete, and we won't have it anymore.
Last August, there was a story about a professor who made a supercapacitor out of hemp. Remember that?
Isn't that crazy? He wasn't only making supercapacitors. He was making all kinds of battery-type devices from banana peels. And yeah, crazy stuff. Yeah, that's for real. I can't remember which university he was from. He's a professor. Recently moved from Canada to the U.S. to roll this thing out.
A genius.
Yeah, yeah. And it is fully validated. This is, you know, basically mainstream science with a new twist. Yeah, but this politics of hemp, you know, that hemp is looked at as, you know, like pot, and isn't that illegal? And that's craziness. I mean, hemp has so many wonderful uses. It should not be illegal.
All right, so over the next 3 years, what changes do you think we're going to see in the energy field?
Well, you know, that's hard. That really, again, comes back to us as a people. What do we deserve? And if we will wake up through programs such as yours and people getting on the ball and supporting these technologies that are fledgling because they don't have enough money, they don't have this, they don't have that, step in and help these guys and give them a hand, then this thing could go a lot faster. And so it really is up to us, because if we got our acts together, we could have the stuff in a few months, but are we going to get our acts together? And I've been at this for 12 years thinking we're 5 minutes from market the entire time, because we've had something on the radar that's that close, and yet it hasn't materialized. And I really think it's because we don't deserve it yet. And again, when we finally get our act together and stop deserving tyranny, then we will see this stuff roll out. And that stop deserving tyranny can be true of individuals, intentional communities, people who are living off-grid. Those are individual exceptions to the rule, and those would be the place where you want to target the rollout. And we may see some limited rollout of these things.
Maybe. Are there any countries ahead of us, Sterling, in this arena?
Oh, man, Russia. Yeah. I would say per capita that we see more stuff from Russia almost twice as much than any other country. Next would be the U.S. Next would be, I don't know. Europe in general is very forward on this stuff. There's a lot of really cool stuff from over there. Australia has a few things. But, you know, not much from the Asian countries. They're good at replicating, not so much inventing. The tyranny that they've had over the years doesn't foster the inventive thinking like it does in the West. But that kind of goes against what I said about Russia, because, you know, what's up with that? I mean, we see so many things coming from Russia.
What about China?
Almost a complete goose egg. I can't think of a single exotic free energy technology that had its origin in China. There's a lot of interest from China in this stuff, but not originating it.
Well, they will duplicate it. You know that.
Yeah. And, you know, that's actually a good step when they duplicate it, because they're really good at duplicating cheaply and making things affordable.
I know you got a lot of websites, Sterling. Give out a few of them for us.
Well, freeenergynews.com is easiest to remember.
Okay.
Free Energy News.
All right, and that's the one we'll link up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Let's come back with an hour to go with you of phone calls as we talk about cold fusion and other energy systems. And also the big question to you, do you think the power brokers, the higher-ups, are going to fight this? I think so. What do you think? Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.